Good morning. It's Friday, July 10th, 2026, and you are watching Deprogram with Ted Rollins and Marl Thomas. I keep trying to join the show without some kind of like weird spooge on my shirt, but I failed again today, 2 days in a row. I promise it's just either coffee or water. It's nothing untoward. Anyway, hopefully it'll evaporate at some point during the show. Thanks everyone for joining, unless that one guy pays the $5,000, in which case, it'll.
For those wondering, no, I did not drool on Ted's shirt, so
No, not yet.
we are innocent. We are innocent.
We're counting the hours for that. Thanks everyone for joining us. Please like, follow, and share the show. We're here live Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. so Eastern Time. If you're watching live, please like, follow, and share, and of course, chime in with your live questions anytime in the between 9 and 10 a.m. Paid ones get priority, but as you guys know, we try to get to everything. All right, so let's get to it. Good morning, Jamal. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Isn't in the best of shape, but I'm okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I won't insist because I'm the kind of person who doesn't like to be insisted upon. So
What do you mean?
I don't insist on upon others. We're
What
both
do you mean? Insist
INFJs. We know
upon?
how to do it. Sorry.
You say insist upon? What do you mean?
Is something going on? Are you sure you're
Oh
okay?
no, my stomach just hurts. No, it's
Oh, your stomach hurts.
I woke up this morning and my it was just in pain. And I didn't even do my show this morning.
Shit.
I was I it, my mom, when she hit me up, anytime I don't do my show, my mom is like, "Is everything okay?" She thinks I'm a dad or something. And I think it was like 8:40, and she was like, "Are you doing Ted's show?" And I was like, "What?" It's like, "Holy shit, that's right."
Oh, yeah,
Yeah,
that. Well,
that.
although
No.
today, was it like this for you? This today, maybe it's because of the holiday last week. Yesterday felt like a Friday. Like, I feel like today's
Yesterday
Saturday,
did feel
we
like a
should be
Friday to me.
working. Yeah.
It did feel like a Friday. I don't know why. It just did feel like a Friday.
I totally felt that way. And it's not, and it's definitely, today's definitely not a Saturday. Today we've got Deprogram TMI, and I've got DMZ coming up at 11 a.m. Interview with cartoonist Alexandra Bowman, for those who are interested. She's a young cartoonist, and she's going to be telling us why editorial cartooning sucks. I have a feeling I'm going to agree with most of what she has to say. All right, let's get to it. We have basically the topics we have in the queue. I mean, obviously, we can talk about the Iran war, although there's not really new developments. It's more of an ongoing clusterfuck, but
Still.
ongoing clusterfucks are worth checking in on sometimes. Do you want to talk about that, or should we get straight to the shooting down in where was this? God, Salgado Arallo. This was in Memphis. No, where was this? Sorry. I can't believe I'm so disorganized this morning.
We get to the shooting. I mean, because as you said, there's nothing really new in the war that I've become aware of. I mean, there
Houston.
is a story that Vanessa Beally ran with where Trump went to, okay, so, Trump made this offhand remark where he said something like, "Yeah, I'll let Jelani do it. Basically, I'll let the terrorists do it as opposed to Israel doing it because the terrorists, weirdly enough, he doesn't believe are going to murder a lot of people despite the fact that they've been ethnically cleansing in Syria." And so he's like, "I'll let Jelani do it. I'll let the terrorists do it." Which is, there's so many layers to that. That's wild, right? Jelani used to run the Syrian branch of ISIS or Al-Qaeda, choose your alphabet soup. And Trump brings him in saying, "Good looking guy, strong pass." And he's like, "Yeah, a strong pass of chopping off heads." I mean, he's acting like chopping heads was a youthful indiscretion as opposed to, chopping off heads. And it makes it that much clearer. When people make the statement that, this is a ICE, this is a CIA MI6 creation of sorts, or at the very least co-opted many of these people in order to work for our behest. So whether they're sending terrorists down to the Sahel states in order to disrupt what's taking place in regards to Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, or whether it's using it here. And in this case, people were like, "Okay, well, is that an offhand remark?" And Vanessa, who lives in Lebanon, who was there in Syria when Syria fell, was like, "That's not an offhand remark." And then you get Trump having the conversation with Erdogan saying, "I'm removing the sanctions. So if you want your F-35s, you're going to get your F-35s." Okay, well, why is Trump doing that now? And are these things related to one another? And the answer seems to be yes. Turkey, or Turkey, depending on how you want to call it, has influence over Jelani. In fact, Jelani is only in that position because of Turkey, the United States, and Israel. So he's not a person unto himself. So even though when asked, he was like, yeah, I just want balance for Lebanon and everything else. He has a massive military of terrorists that are on the Lebanese border. And so that's the, if I was going to say anything that's moving, it's that. But yeah, you're right. The war is basically where it was yesterday.
Yeah. All right. So this shooting was in Houston, Texas, and I apologize for not being able to recall that right away. So basically, this is very reminiscent of the Renee Good thing. So basically, ICE officers, DHS, they were allegedly looking for one dude. They didn't find him. He's still running around. But they basically they confronted a bunch of other migrants, and the one guy ended up dead. Salgado Araujo is his name. Once again, just like what happened with Renee Good in Minneapolis, the authorities immediately said he tried to weaponize his car. He tried to drive over the officer. However, three witnesses, now admittedly, these are three migrant witnesses, but three witnesses who were also arrested all had the same story to tell, even though they were all being held in separate places, separate cells. And they all said that no, he didn't ram the car, that he didn't weaponize his vehicle, that the officers in question were neither in front nor in back, but to the side of the car, and therefore could not have gotten hit. It looks like another trigger-happy ICE officer shot someone for no reason and then shot one guy and arrested three other people, none of whom they happened to really be looking for at the time. And now here we are. I don't know. I mean, it's like with shootings of unarmed black guys by white cops. It just happens over and over. And you wonder, will there ever be any end to it? But, you know, there will certainly be. There's already controversy. There are already protests. The immigrant community in Houston and their allies have already mobilized. There's already protests. It's hot and spicy in Texas in July. I would imagine we will hear about this for a while.
Well, I guess the question is, will there be consequences? If there are no consequences, then this is going to keep happening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Most likely not. Usually there aren't.
But that's what it boils down to, right? Like, it's one thing if like, for example, after the George Floyd stuff, and you got this mass uprising. Okay, that's a consequence, right? That's a clear, definitive consequence of the public rejecting what is taking place.
Right.
Burning, like, it might have, you can make an argument that it's gone too far in some cases. I would argue that they were provocateurs in some of these cases, and in other cases, obviously, it went too far. It's protests. That's kind of the point of protest.
Or you could also argue it didn't go far enough.
And that, I mean, it's a protest. Like, the entire point of protest is not to be peaceful. I know people think otherwise, that we've sanitized it, where it's like, well, everybody's just calm and cool and clean. A protest is a threat. That's what it is. You have a huge number of people who are effectively asserting power, or at the very least, potential power that could be utilized if indeed XYZ continues. That's the point. I don't want people burning down liquor stores. That feels dumb to me. But from the standpoint of projection of power, yes. But I think what needs to happen, or what should have happened, it shouldn't need a protest for that. It should be just, hey, maybe we don't want our cops or ICE agents murdering people. How about that?
Doesn't seem like it should be asking a lot.
You wouldn't think, but apparently it is. I mean, these people think they're, you know, immune to opposition.
And they're not wrong, are they? I mean, nothing much happens to them.
Yeah, they don't seem to be wrong. Hence, it continues. It happens again. There's no, it does with impunity. So yeah, anything that happens with impunity is going to continue to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. No question about it. Let's see if we have any questions we need to get to. All right. Yeah, we do. Okay. So we are going to be talking about the reflecting pool. The reflecting pool wasn't damaged by trans women swimmers. Maybe too much rudder. Thanks for the $2. All right. Be honest, Ted, John D. Cockefeller. It's a pregame hog crank sesh. We all do it immediately before a deprogram. I do mine after. Avoid precisely this sort of thing. But yeah. Anyway, no Jeffrey Toobin type situations here.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the
thing. I don't know how he came back to work after that. Right? That is rough.
He's back. He's at the Times. He's at CNN.
But that's amazing to me. All these people have seen his dick. And like the worst aspect of it. Like him. That is like the most undignified shit in the world. I understand that everybody within their context feels like when a person has sex, they feel like the movies or something like that. But if somebody watches it, it just looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's outside of context. Like you're in a context with somebody else. Both of you are, you know, it's loving, it's beautiful, this is a beautiful thing, that type of thing.
Powerful.
But if anybody's watching it, it's not like a porn set. It's like,
if you've ever walked in on someone doing it, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. It's just random in their 40s in undignified positions. That's rough. I feel bad for him because obviously it wasn't on purpose.
No, he was.
I wish he would have said, it's a beautiful thing before cutting off hair.
It's kind of like a tribute to how boring Zoom meetings are. I mean, he literally was on a Zoom meeting with the New Yorker, you know, who are some of the most illustrious writers in the country, or at least they used to be. And he's so bored that he's like, I can multitask here. I can rub one out while, you know, I'm on this meeting with 24 people. Who's going to know? And I'm like, why don't you just do the thing that the kids were doing during COVID and just like turn off your camera? Go do it somewhere else, right? Just like,
it's like, I'm Jeffrey. Well, I suppose he thought it was turned off. I don't think he started whacking off on purpose.
Oh, no, it's totally an accident, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel that sorry for him for the simple reason that, like, look, it's like Richard Gere. That story will always follow him. Like, if Jeffrey Toobin walked into a New York City party, everyone would be like, look, it's Jeffrey Toobin. Look, where's his dick? You know what I mean? It's just like he's never going to live that down. It's going to be like, you know, like I had a friend who gave a speech when she got her Pulitzer, and she said, the thing that we all have in common in this room is we all know the first few words of our obituary, right? Pulitzer Prize winning. And he knows, like, that will be in his obituary. It will be.
Or it will be talked about around his death.
On the other hand, I don't feel too sorry for him. He didn't go back to work for the New Yorker, but he kept everything else, you know.
But it took months. Like, he was away for like 4 or 5 months or 3 or 4 months or whatever that number is. Sure. Like, he went away for a while. He was like, okay.
They call me Matt. They decide, you know, like, if you're – some people can fuck up royally. And, like, and they're in. They're still – they're grandfathered in.
That's a particular type of fuck up. Like, that's humiliating. Like, it's just humiliating. Like – everybody masturbates, and everybody knows that everyone masturbates, but it's different to watch somebody masturbate.
Right.
And you're not even talking about like a 20-year-old.
In a work meeting.
Yeah, I think it's a Zoom meeting, no less.
Well, I think the reason why Toobin got a pass is because he was doing it to the news that Trump was going to get indicted. That's what turned him on. So
he was masturbating to that. And they were like, let's talk about Trump.
I've never heard that at all.
Fact check it. It was when Trump got indicted before he got his famous mugshot, you know, when it looked like he had a real chance of going to the pokey.
That's
what I'm going to say. You're saying that Jeffrey Toobin got so aroused when he was listening to them talk about Trump getting indicted that he just saw it whacking one out.
The two of y'all know people have got a massive case of TDS.
Yeah, but it's not sexual.
Well, for some people, it probably is. For Jeffrey, that's the argument that I'm going to make, because literally,
like, if Austin Buettner went to prison as he deserves, I would be over the moon, but I'm not getting hard, you know?
Well, that's because
maybe Tubin does. Maybe that's his kink. I'm not going to rag on a guy for his kink.
I mean, listen, I'm telling you, that's what happened. The meeting was about Trump getting indicted,
and well, that's not like why he was jerking off.
I guarantee it was.
It might have been. I'm going to go. I personally agree with Robbie on this one. I like this narrative better. That Jeffrey Tubin got so excited with him talking about Trump in prison that he had to rub one out.
Oh, I like it. I like it better. I just don't think it's true. But all right.
And my son got me a new hat, as y'all can see. So proud of that.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
So proud of him.
What is the U.S.
U.S. Border Patrol, baby.
I can't see the last part. It says U.S.
Border Patrol.
Oh, Border Patrol. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
What's so proud of it. I'm so
by the way, we're in a place now where Border Patrol is not even like as bad. They're merely the SA. You know, the real SS is ICE, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Don't come here illegally. You'll have no problems. Bye.
330 million people who are here perfectly legally have plenty of problems. But all right. Let's see here. Okay. John D. Cockfeller. Instead of Pink Lady Apples 48, we need a chatbot named Blue Boy Lemon 69 that just sexually harasses Ted, JT, and Robbie. All
right. hey, don't talk that shit up. Somebody will build that shit.
Like in about a minute. Right Hook X. Thanks for the $5. After hearing your stories from yesterday's show, I'm truly sorry for the tragic life events you experienced, Ted, but I'm proud of you, of the man you have become, and appreciate you, and get well, JT. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. No, I mean, I think a lot of people have some, I mean, very few people haven't experienced trauma or tragedy. It's very unusual, I think. I've met a few, but it's either, if it's not one thing, it's another. You know, it's a disease, it's a loss of a loved one. I think like John Edwards, man, his fucking beautiful 16-year-old son, I think he was 16, driving on the highway. By all accounts, according to the police investigated, he's following the all traffic laws, not driving erratically, in the speed, you know, driving at appropriate speed. A fucking micro tornado picked up his car and fucking killed him. It was it was his one child. I mean, fucking life is mean, you know?
Live vigorously. Yeah. Like people always, like my ex used to be very concerned about death. And a lot of people are, where they are like, they have this palpable fear of it.
Death.
Yeah, death. Mm-hmm. But my thing is like, you can die tomorrow. You can die at any moment. What's the point of holding on to it? Like meaning, when you accept that it's inevitable, You're free. Live your life. I mean, like there was no way that somebody could have predicted a micro tornado is going to pick up a car and kill a 16-year-old.
No.
No way. And you could think of, okay, well, there were people who were 60 years old, were very ill, and yet the 16-year-old died before then. Mm-hmm. When if you were playing parlor market, you would have put the money on 16-year-old living longer. And you could do this over and over in various spots. I mean, obviously, like if you're looking at percentages, that from a probability standpoint, the 16-year-old is going to live longer. But it's probability. It's not an act of God, if that makes sense. Like, live your life. Be free. I mean, there's you can't hold on to it. There's an unpredictability element associated with it. You try to push the probability in your favor as far as you can go. But beyond that,
I mean, you are allowed, yeah. I mean, before we move on from this, I mean, which I think is important, when I had my good friend Scott Stantis, with whom I co-host TMZ America, gave me some amazing advice one time. He was like, I was about to be fired from a job. And he was like, oh, based on what you're telling me, they're going to totally fire you. But he was like, take some advice. You're going to want to immediately hit the ground running. I know you, and look, find another job. He's like, don't. Like take 2 or 3 weeks and just be fucking sad and then put it behind you and move on. And it was sound advice, because if you don't do that, you don't process, and then it stays with you a long time. But you don't. So it's like you do want to honor these experiences, but you don't want to brood. I think
we try not to
is the best way.
Like, I know after when I fell back into the country, and I wasn't working. I wasn't doing anything. My thing was, I may go fucking blind. What do I care about this other stuff? And, you know, the reality of it is I did that. I want to say on purpose, where you just kind of, because I know that there is, just as a natural process, you're going to feel shitty for a while because you're trying to absorb this kind of new norm that you're trying to take in, and you just kind of let it flow its course. Like there was, like, meaning from my point of view, there's nothing else you could do about it. You absorb it, you process it of sorts, you reach your new norm. Because eventually you start, ideally, you start paying, because I'll speak for me. Eventually got to the point where I was like, started looking at the news a little bit, right? And you start feeling some kind of way about something that's happening. And you start looking at something else and something else. And then you find yourself sliding back into your norm of whatever that norm was. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you hit me up about deprogramming. I was like, you hit me up. Hello. Let's do it.
Yeah, that was so, that was great. A great call.
Me out of the funk of that sort. So I was, because I had already started moving in that direction. When you called me, it was like, all right, let's do it. Let's make this.
It's work. Time. It's that was a great response. A fantastic response. All right. So more, here we go. Manchild 5000. We going to talk. Thanks for the dollar. We going to talk about Trump firing the last remaining members of the Election Commission. Midterm election fuckery seems even more palpable.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, like, we have gotten so cynical as a society and as a culture to where when a president does stuff like this, our response is, hey, that sucks. When the response should be far more vigorous. Like, this is a dismantling of governance and basic policy in order to get various things accomplished. Like, we have an election commission for reasons. It's not just there for Donald Trump's delight. In fact, if it's independent, I don't even know why the president has the ability to do that. Like, why do we assume good faith?
We don't. Honestly, I think that this is all just a continuation of Trump's strategy of move fast and break things, right? And I guess that was Zuckerberg who said that, but it's Mussolini who kind of made that. I'm sure there's previous historians who have, analysts and political figures who've mentioned that. But basically the idea is, you know, with Mussolini, he's like, do something, do anything, even better to do the wrong thing or a stupid thing or a destructive thing than to do nothing at all. It keeps the public interested in you and it keeps your opponents off balance. And as you throw more shit at the wall, at a certain point, they can't respond anymore. And we're seeing that with Trump. That was every single day, there's a new fucking thing. I mean, yesterday, Palm Beach Airport, renamed. It's now DJT. It's now Donald J. Trump International Airport. It's always some fucking thing. I didn't even put that into the mix because it's like there's so much other shit to talk about. And I think that, like, the opponents, the way you have to handle this, it reminds me of one time when I was a banker and I came home, I was wearing a suit and it was the 80s and New York City was New York City in the 80s. And I got set upon by like a little gang of like 10, basically 15, 16 year old kids who basically swarmed me. And they're like picking at me, grabbing into my pocket, trying to get my money, trying to get my wallet. One of them ripped off my watch. And it was like basically being attacked by like locusts, right? And it occurred to me, pick one. Like, you can't get them all. There's too many. Right. So you pick one. So I picked one and throttled him. And then I looked around for another one. And then they all hesitated. No one wanted to be next. And they ran. It's like, pick one. So that's what the Democrats or real, or let's say the left, should be doing in a situation like this. Pick one thing, and or maybe two, but focus on a few things and just keep focusing and ignore the rest. Just keep it going day after day after day. If it were me, it would be the wars, but like, pick something. And they don't do that. They're like, oh my God, this is like ADD. They're like ADD, right? They just can't. They're like, oh my God, but now he's doing what? And now there's, you know, but now there's Vance. And then now we run. So they don't do anything. They're paralyzed.
Yeah, but is that a flaw though, Ted? I mean, because when they take power, the president that Trump has established, they're going to inherit. Yeah. So why would they?
They're gonna love it.
Yeah. So why would they stop it? I mean, both sides benefit. So why would you?
That's the flaw. That's the flaw in the logic, right, Robbie?
Yeah.
Like both sides.
I'm talking about the real left, like not Democrats.
Well, the real left, just like the real right, has no power.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The left has any power.
They can break things. They can protest. I mean, Robbie, stay on. You put in the chat, do the protesters trying to protect migrants in violation of the law get a pass, and why? Well, first of all, I think that's kind of like a conflation. Protesting, you can protest for anything. I mean, they're trying to change the law, right? They're trying to say, like, these people should be allowed to stay here. You know, they should be able to stay here legally. I mean, you know, protests are often about changing laws.
Sure. But, I mean, maybe it's because the right traditionally is not very good at protesting. So, no, I've been to plenty of protests, like, you know, gun rights rallies, that kind of thing. And to your point, JT, is that it wasn't a threat. It was a way for us to express our grievances, in this case, to the state government in Helena. It was when the previous governor, Governor Bullock, he wanted to have red flag laws instigated here in Montana. And naturally, you know, that's something that, you know, right-wingers here in Montana, well, not even just right-wingers, but a lot of lefties too. It's like, no, you do not get to violate civil law by confiscating property that does not belong to you.
And who determines the red flag?
Yeah,
who defines
exactly
the red flag?
Exactly, because I mean, you can't charge me for a crime that I haven't committed, and you can't take my property without due process. So that's what Governor Bullock was trying to do.
Yeah, but if we don't like the cut of your jib, Robbie, that's good enough.
Yeah, no, I get it. So I guess the question that I have...
I'd say any man with a hat like that probably shouldn't have the right to bear arms.
Obviously. I mean, I want to get an ICE one next time. The problem is that I don't support what ICE has done. I support the mission, but I don't support the way that they do it.
Yeah.
So, I guess the question that I have, you know, for y'all and for people in the chat is, if someone is in the country illegally and they have a deportation order, like they should be sent home, then the people take it upon themselves to defy law enforcement.
Right.
Then don't they have, isn't there at that point some fuck around and find out attitude that comes with that? I mean,
during the Vietnam War, people did not want, people were protesting, for example, the draft. They did not want, even though it was the law of the land that people were subject to the draft, the protesters did not want that. They wanted the law of the land to change. They didn't want these people to be subjected to the draft. They didn't want the war to go on.
Well, the war was illegal because it was a violation of the Constitution, just like the Iran war. So, as a right winger, I would have been out there supporting them.
No, but that's the rub, though, Robbie. It wasn't illegal because
that war was totally illegal.
The country said it wasn't illegal.
But
like the entire edifice of government is going to function as if this is a legal thing. We do all sorts of illegal shit. It doesn't necessarily mean that they consider it illegal.
Yeah, no,
and
listen,
also, I
get it.
And I was also say the protests that you guys were doing. For one, it's gun rights or a gun group, correct?
It was really a broad spectrum type of thing. So you had lefties, you had righties. Basically, it was civil libertarians, you know, who were out protesting the destruction of due process in the United States. Because that's what a red flag law is.
Okay,
basically. What it is what a red flag law is, and here's how I would tie this back into Vietnam. Just like Korea, the Constitution is very clear. Only Congress can levy war.
The Constitution doesn't matter.
I understand that, but if we're going to lie to ourselves and say that we are a constitutional republic, then the Constitution has to matter.
No, I guess the only thing I'm pointing out is what's true is irrelevant. What matters is what the narrative and
framing,
the way the legal structures function behind a particular thing. Meaning when the president comes out, the Iran war should be illegal, but it's not. You still have Americans murdering Iranians. The Vietnam War, if you want to make the argument, was illegal. Okay, yeah, but it stayed in place, and the structures and legalities of it flowed from the fact that it was in place and that the government and everything else went along with it. I'm saying what's technically true is irrelevant to what is colloquially true. in the way that they actually process policy. That's what I'm trying. That's the difference I'm trying to make it for this. I understand that people make the argument the war is technically illegal. Fair enough. You will still be prosecuted and you will still be thrown to the war if indeed you were drafted and you tried to get away from the draft. So it didn't matter to the courts that it was, quote, technically illegal.
Now listen, I agree with you.
As if it did. And from the protest standpoint, look, philosophically, it is a threat. You have a large number of people together, almost like an army, angry at the government over a particular point and showing we have this much support for this particular item. I'm not saying that you guys went out and burned stuff down. I'm saying it's philosophically a threat. It's the public mobilizing for a particular objective, almost like the public was a military. And if that public turned kinetic, all sorts of shit was going to break down.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's the real risk that we're going to run into is that eventually one day, I don't know where, is what's going to happen. It's kind of like what happened in Ireland, right? You know, with the riots, you know, after that migrant tried to behead that dude right there on the street. I mean, what happens when the population has had enough? The military or the police comes in and then someone opens fire. What then happens? Once that genie's out of the bottle, you know, where does it start? You know, where does it end? And I guess the part that I don't understand, and I probably never will, is why there's so much energy on, you know, I'll call it the left. I don't really know how you would classify it. So much energy for the population to protect people who shouldn't even be here in the first place.
Because they care about human beings.
But going, listen, we're talking about sending them back home, not killing them.
It is very weird. It's very wild to me that religion ended up on the right. Because if you're talking about the qualities that give a shit about people, you're talking about the left. Even to the point of putting their own bodies on the line in order to protect people who, as you point out, was here illegally, meaning the least of us as human beings. So you may dislike that, but it's just a factor of the left. We care about life.
You're also... The thing is, Robbie,
if you care about life, you wouldn't be pro-abortion. I mean, that's a hard thing.
Not at all. I'm sorry. You are out here screaming that we should be killing people left and right.
Let's not.
Despite your godliness,
we'll do abortion later. But right now, this immigration thing. I mean, so look, the reason, Robbie, is that these are the left is. Always concerned with people who are vulnerable and weak and who are powerless, right? That's always like where the left is most concerned. And undocumented workers, illegal aliens, whatever you want to call them, they fit the bill to a T. They don't even have the ability to pick up the phone. They're worried about calling the fire department if their house is on fire for fear of being deported and losing their livelihood and maybe having their family broken apart. So that's the answer to your question. To put a clear point on it, you note that like most on the left, nobody's protesting like we want more H-1B visas. No one on the left is like, yay, tech bros coming in from India to take American jobs. You guys are awesome. Nobody likes them, cares about them, wants this program to continue. What we're talking about is people who are, and I agree with you that the, you know, people who, this affects the labor market, it hurts American workers, it shouldn't be allowed, the border should be controlled. We've talked about all that.
Well, you can't have it both ways, Ted. If you care about American workers, you have to close the borders.
But the whole point is we can see that the system is exploiting the illegal immigrants and they're exploiting the American worker by trying to pit us against each other. On the left, we see that we can make common cause, that we're all being fucked over by the man, and that we need to get together and work together because we're all being fucked over. That's why the lefties are sympathetic to these people.
Then maybe it's time for the left to pick a side. Are you going to be pro-American worker or are you going to be pro-open the borders? Because you can't have both. You got to pick a side. That's all I'm saying. The hypocrisy that's coming out of your mouth is outstanding.
Only rich people are for open borders, Robbie. Yeah. Like the Clinton.
It's not rich people out there obstructing the police.
No, but the internationalists who have been leaving of both parties, the Clintons and all these people who've been leaving the borders open, that's that's a rich person thing. This is a class issue. And from the left is interested in class analysis. And we look at class analysis, we're like, do we have common cause with H-1B visa holders? Not so much. Do we have it with people, you know, picking fruit, even if they take a picking fruit job away from you, Robbie? Yeah, we do, because we're all working class. We're all
bullshit. And here's what I want to call bullshit. 4,000 Americans are losing their jobs at Microsoft because those workers are being replaced by H-1B visa holders.
Right.
There is not one single swinging dick on your side of the aisle that's out there saying this is wrong or out there protesting. Who's in Seattle right now breaking stuff? But there's not. Don't tell me what should be. Now, your people get out there and say, oh, my God, you're enforcing the law. No, we got to stop that. Those devilish cops, we got to stop them.
But Robbie, politics is complicated. And, like, you know, the left doesn't do a good job, okay? And the left has to pick and choose what it's going to protest. And it doesn't do a good job at doing that. For sure, if I were the emperor of the left, Microsoft would not hear the end of the H-1B visa program, okay? And neither would any other company do this. There'd be a national boycott. We'd be breaking their windows. We'd be fucking them up. But, like, the point is that, like, I'm not the emperor of the left. And, like, the left basically kind of, like, they catch as catch can. It's, you know, it's opportunistic. It's what can you get people to show up for a rally for? It's not – I mean, you're right, Robbie. People – I care about those Americans who are losing their jobs every bit as much, if not more, than about those illegal immigrants. I do. I mean, it's fucking wrong.
And by the way, we've talked about it. We disagree with it. I mean, look, you're making this argument as if you're talking to people who disagree with you.
Right.
Because y'all fundamentally are disagreeing with me. Because what you're saying is that basically the argument that you're making is about compassion. We need to be compassionate about the people who've come here from poor, destitute countries with nothing. They came here for a better life. I understand the argument.
Just to be clear, you're misframing this again, as you continuously do. You asked me, why does the left, meaning the first question that you asked me, and the point I made to you is the reason that the left gives a shit about it is because it cares about people. Uh-huh. I didn't say that they were right for, look, if you asked Ted and I about the border, we would probably say that, yes, the border should be controlled. Now, we may quibble about the amount of immigration, but we would agree with you that the border should be controlled. We would probably disagree with you about 4 million people being deported. So I don't think that disagreement is going to change.
Oh, if 4 million is way too few. We need to deport at least 30 million.
It is outrageous that they are firing 4,000 people. Hell, the H-1B1 visa program in and of itself is outrageous.
Shouldn't exist.
So, I mean, it's not like you're fighting or you're dealing with Clintonite,
right?
Who would agree that the border should be open, even though they may be very dodgy about the way they talk about it, and would probably agree with the H-1B1 visa program because it was like, oh, well, we need qualified people and Americans can't do it, blah, blah, blah. You're not talking to the people like that. We agree with you with the H-1B1 stuff.
It's a solidarity thing, Robbie. It's sort of like, okay, the capos in the death camps. They were separated by the Nazis from the general population and basically told to lord it over their fellow Jews and beat them up. And like, and they were, you're the boss, you're the capo. But the truth is from a Marxist analysis, the capo was in the same, had class solidarity with his other Jews and should have been able to see that. But the Nazis divided and conquered them. But in the end, the capo ended up as a pile of ashes, just like the people he was beating.
Yes, right?
It's like the Judenrat, which was the, you know, the Jewish community, the elite Jews in the ghettos who cooperated with and liaised with the Nazi authorities. And the Nazis would say, we want 10,000 Jews, give us a list. And they would, right? Like in the Warsaw or the Lodz ghetto. In the end, those guys all ended up in Auschwitz. The only difference is they didn't go in cattle cars. They rode in passenger trains with lace curtains on the windows. But they ended up in the same place. They went up in the same chimneys. They didn't recognize the truth of their class identity, which was in that particular situation, you're not rich, you're not elite, you're Jewish, all Jews are being depressed, you guys all need to stick together. That's what I'm arguing here. It's like the authorities are dividing and conquering us here, and they're pitting us against each other. We shouldn't be pitted. And like, we have more in common with these poor fucking people who are just trying to fucking work, and they think they're following the rules, and you know, then they get fucked around and then like misunderstood. And but that's the answer to your question, you know,
and used as a bargaining chip.
You'll never make an alliance with the right with that attitude.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the point, right? Yeah. That's the whole divide and conquer thing.
Yeah, okay. I guess. I mean, if the left
should, by the way, left thing, like being like not being divided, like the populist left versus the populist right, that's also divide and conquer bullshit from the authorities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell you what, you can keep your illegal immigrants if I don't have to obey federal gun laws or tax laws. You want that much? Then throw me a bone.
Done. We'll work this out right here on the show. Okay, we have more comments. Thank you very much for all your support here. John D. Cockefeller, are you fellers familiar with Dr. Mark Perlmutter? I wasn't until this morning, and I shared it with you on the Discord. Perlmutter, MD with firsthand experience with the Gaza genocide, would be a killer deprogram guest. All right. Well, if someone knows him, reach out. But otherwise, Robbie, maybe you can reach out, or I'll do it. F you so. Have you tried VR porn? You can even be an anime or cartoon. Thanks for the $2. I have
no.
Not.
No.
I have not.
Look, I have a certain quirk. I don't know if it's – I don't, and I don't know if this applies to everybody else. This was something that Robbie said once when he was talking about the AI Jesus, or something like that. It's the idea of it needs to have a soul. Like, and it doesn't. It's fake. Like, and that matters. Like, what's the – like, I don't even know the point of that. Even though I know some people, it doesn't – that not everybody cares. Not everybody needs that. But I need to know that if I'm doing something, that the response is not fake. The response is real. And you know what? This even got to me about like friends. Like, is it enough to believe you have a friend, or do you need to have a friend? Like, let's say you're talking to somebody. You could be in very different states of mind. Like, most recently, there was a woman who, I guess she was trying to capture me. I didn't realize this though. Like, I didn't realize that this was her state of mind. And this went on for months, where to me, okay, we're just sending texts back and forth. And then when I get back into the States, I realize, oh, she believes that there is a thing here. Okay, well, this is purely in her mind.
I've had that, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, imagine that situation, though, with a friend and somebody who you think is a friend. You don't know as a flat fact that you guys are on the same wavelength in regards to the way that you're looking at the particular situation. And your response to that person, if it's not on the same wavelength, that person is going to look at that response as weird because you guys are not on the same wavelength. Like, does it matter? Is it enough to believe that somebody is your friend, or do they actually have to be? And is there a difference if you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
I
would say, like, in that case, if you think you have the friend, even if you're wrong, it feels the same. It's good enough.
I know, but is there a difference? Like, but is
there is a difference? Because when
I guess the point is, truth matter.
First test, you're going to find out. You know.
Yeah, I guess my point is, does truth matter? Is it enough for a person to die?
Doesn't something? Matter. As long as you, until you find it out.
I want to believe.
If you ever learn the truth, it does not matter.
No, I don't want to believe that. Like, I want to believe that truth matters and matters in a cosmic sense.
Oh, well, I'll give you that one. I thought you meant psychologically.
Well, I don't know. That's a tough one to me. That's a tough one. No, but my point is, there is no. That there's nothing going on in the mind of the AI person, whereas for me, I care about what's going on in the other person's mind.
And I think for sex, that's, or porn or whatever, that's important for sure. All right, this one's for you. We have a lot more comments to get to and a couple stories. Para illegal, thanks for the $10. Obviously, this is not for me. What is your favorite chess opening?
It depends on which side. If I'm playing on the black. Yeah, it depends on the side, because,
white,
you know, like many military matters, you don't always get choice. Mm-hmm. People drag you into certain areas. I play the King's Indian Attack a lot. I like to play the Rui Lopez if I get the opportunity to do so. That's probably my favorite E4. On Queen's Opening, it's going to be the King's Indian Defense. I know this sounds very racist, but it's just the name of the opening. Either King's Indian Defense, Rui Lopez, or the King's Indian Attack are probably my favorites.
Okay, let's keep going. Waterways, thanks for the $20. Have a great weekend, and thank you for the show, Ted, Jamarl, and Robbie. Thank you also for, we couldn't do it without you. Sam Palmisano, thanks for the $20 also. California, Gavin Newsom just got a new bill for tax legislation to change the definition of personal tangible property to include intangible software applications and code. Nice. So now you will have to pay sales and use tax on software.
What?
Well, that's not that crazy. I mean, so like if you were to, for example, okay, so.
Yeah, I need an example.
Adobe Photoshop. So in other words, back in the day, if you got a DVD for Adobe Photoshop and you uploaded that, you had to pay sales and use tax if you bought it in California.
Okay.
Now, if you download it from the internet, but it's I'm pretty sure Adobe is a California-based company, you would have to pay sales and use tax on that download.
So I have to pay tax on the download?
Yeah.
But I didn't have to pay tax on the download before. Usually...
Well, not you wouldn't have to pay. You had to pay. No, you would not have had to pay for it. Yeah, I don't remember ever paying for a tax on a download for an app or anything like that.
For some reason, I feel like I did, but
it
maybe
was a flat fee.
Remembering
like,
it.
Yeah, if the app is $5, the app is $5. It's not $5 plus 8.25%.
Okay, so basically, you have to pay sales tax
on intangible like IP. So like for example,
if I download an audio album or an audio book.
Yeah.
In California, I have to pay tax on that book.
Yeah. Or I guess potentially if you downloaded a movie, an MP4.
I understand why California is doing it. They're trying to increase revenue. I get it.
Yeah. They're broke. And not to mention, that's a major source of revenue since they have so much tech.
Yeah, I get it.
It's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, Nick Riviera, the Hinju CEO of Microsoft, is offshoring these American jobs to India. That's certainly
yes.
Sam Palmisano, thanks for the $10.
And by the way, wait, before we pass that.
Yeah.
He's not wrong for that. He's doing his job. What's wrong is the laws allow him to do that.
Correct.
Like, meaning we can't entirely bitch at CEOs when those CEOs are told, hey, go maximize your profit.
Yeah, they have literally you are told when you become a CEO that you have a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders, to their short-term quarterly profits, right?
Yes.
And like, if you violate that, like CEOs who have decided like, oh, I want to do the right thing. I want to pay my workers better, whatever. They've been sued by their shareholders for not maintaining their fiduciary responsibility.
Corporations are machines that are set to maximize their profit. That's
and
what
they don't
are.
Have. And the CEO doesn't. It's the system. The CEO does not have that much
latitude in doing so. Latitude. I mean, like, I guess my thing is we have a capitalist system. We organize the system around how do you maximize profit. And what I think a lot of people mistake is that as if they're supposed to do some benefit for the workers. If he could get away with it, he wouldn't hire workers. Like, he doesn't give a shit about workers. That's not his job.
Right.
Workers are just a byproduct of him needing to make profit. There's a difference in those things. It's one thing if you have a society that says, hey, we want to make sure people are okay. Okay, that's society that needs to be organized around that. That is not our society. So when he's sending jobs like India or China or something like that, he's thinking, I can pay this worker $3 as opposed to 20 or 30 in the United States. Look at me making $27.
He might go home to his wife and say, this sickens me that I have to do this.
He might. He might not.
Some of them do, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, they are a cog in the wheel. Without much latitude. If you want to change it, you have to change the bricks of the of the way we organize.
No, that's profound, and we do have to sort of emphasize that repeatedly. Sam Palmisano, a real well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks for the $10.
Agreed.
P.W. Walker, Robbie needs to have it pointed out that a number of H-1B jobs are only going to happen because they want to get cheap labor. They're not just jobs that will be filled if they had to pay full rate, but that's circular logic, right? Like, you're just deciding not to pay full rate. Right. You know, I mean, if you can't afford to pay full rate, then you can't afford to hire someone. Mr. A. Lee, Ted is a Christian. I mean, I think that's true. I think I'm more Christian than most people who believe in Christ, in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. You know, let's see.
And objective reality, that's what matters.
$20, thanks to Sam Palmisano. Y'all ever plan on doing an afternoon, noon, or night stream for any more than an hour? Need to see the deprogrammed gaming stream. also, Jamarl, are you Hikaru? Both.
Am I in where?
H-I-K-A-R-U, Hikaru.
Oh, what is that, anime?
I don't know what the fuck that is.
I don't know what that is.
Both queen, kings and queens, Indian attack defense is what he does mostly. I'm looking up Hikaru here.
Well, we actually did the game thing yesterday. We played Civ 6. We missed you.
Hikaru. Oh, he's a chess master.
Oh, Hikaru, right. He is extremely strong. He is exceptionally strong, especially with Blitz. He's probably one of the best Blitz players on the planet. Yeah, he's very good.
Okay, so...
Hikaru Nakamura, if I'm not mistaken.
Ray C20, thanks for the $5. Ted, what were the wildest punk shows you attended? Wildest doesn't necessarily mean best. Without a doubt, the Clash opening for The Who was wild, and not in a good way. 1982, Shea Stadium, New York City. The problem was it was oversold, and so it was jam-packed. It was, the crowd control was terrifying. People were like getting like trampled and stuff. The Clash were hated. The crowd was a Who crowd, and they were all high on. They were all snorting mounds of cocaine.
They hated the Clash.
The Who Clash. Oh yeah. The Who fans hated the Clash. I mean, obviously the Who invited the Clash because they viewed the Clash as like their heirs, right? But the Clash, the Who was the headliner. The Clash was the, you know, even though they were at the peak of their powers, this was during the Combat Rock tour. You know, but the point is they were throwing shit at the Clash. The Clash were, they vibed off the hatred of the crowd, and they just charged full on into it, which just riled them up more, and they were throwing shit at them. It was embarrassing though, because I love Who.
You said they charged at them. You're saying they left the stage, or you're saying the music?
No, they like basically just kept playing through it and feeding off the anger of the audience. Kind of the way Iggy Pop, like Iggy likes to go on and insult the crowd, like ethnic slurs, and then like people start throwing shit, and it like gets him riled up. He loves it.
That's insane. Can you imagine having to do some shit like that? Like you're doing a show and people are like screaming and yelling and throwing shit.
Oh, God, it's terrifying. And then you've got like maybe two or three chubby bouncers trying to protect you from like, you know, 20,000 riled up psychopaths. And then there was, Dead Kennedys at opening up at the Beacon Theater on the Upper West Side of Manhattan on New Year's Eve. They were supposed to play Times Square. Somehow they had like finagled a permit, but then someone in City Hall found out like the Dead Kennedys were going to play Times Square, and it was like no. So they arranged this show at the end. It was apocalyptic. It basically the lights all went down, and we hear them start to play Jello Biafra. You can hear him, and he's like, "What better way to toast the future? It's New Year's Eve, 1984, by turning it pitch black," and all the lights, including the exit lights, go out. He's playing. The lights come on, and there's people who've climbed the stack of amps that's like 10 or 15 high. They're jumping off into the audience head first. It's like 50 feet, you know? I mean, they're going to – and it's just this roiling, like, crowd of, you know, most 99% dudes. And it was just – insane. And then at the end of this crazy show, Biafra said, "Oh, we hear you guys got charged $10. It's like we had negotiated $5. Collect $5 on the way out or burn this place down."
What?
So there were at the exit with a stack of fives handing them to people as we all walked out.
He said, if you don't burn this place, man, that is, they can never get away with some shit like that today.
No. 1984, man. It was awesome.
Those are better days.
They were better days. It's true.
Badass, though. Like, if you think about it, like, when you're recounting this memory, do you recount this as badass? Or do you recount this as, oh, my God, this was the worst thing in the world?
No, I remember I thought it was badass as shit. Sam Palmisano, thanks for the $50. $50. Thank you so much. A great way to end the week. I was incredibly sad to see John leave so abruptly. However, Jamarl has been a fantastic addition to the show. I agree. And I really appreciate his commentary. Keep doing a great job, y'all.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. That makes me feel good.
Sam's 100% right. Okay, so one last thing to talk about. Is Mitch McConnell alive? What do you think? I mean, they,
I don't know if Mitch McConnell was alive even when he was alive.
there's some dude who was some Republican dude who claimed to have talked to him who was on TV yesterday, and he was asked like, and he was literally confronted. If Mitch McConnell is alive, call him now. And the guy's like, he totally changed the subject.
Define alive. I mean, if you're kept alive on life support, but you're brain dead. Are you alive?
Oh, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. If you're brain dead, are you still alive?
No, you're done. There's nothing there. Your meat suit is kept alive artificially with machines. There's nothing there.
Out. He's obviously like, you know,
the turtle is done.
I know.
He's roasting in hell as we speak right now.
With a living.
I think we're in agreement on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fascinating question, because that question boils down to, is a person an emergent property out of the mechanisms of matter, which in and of itself is a fascinating thing, right? You have, like, how do these rocks become breathing and thinking and having a world and experiencing
right. everything else? It's great. We're able to agree that Mitch McConnell is roasting a hill.
On the devil's court.
And on an agreement. So we disagree vehemently on immigration.
Twisting on the devil's
court. And we fully celebrate the demise of the turtle.
Yes. Yes. I think, look, from my point of view, there's something that goes beyond matter. And that, like, whether you call it spirit, so I don't know what it is, but I do think there's more to reality than just physical experience. So, yeah, whatever his body is doing. He is roasting in hell.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Stay tuned. TMI coming up right now. I'm running a little late. And DMZ coming up at 11 a.m. with Scott Stantis. Alexandra Bowman is our guest. I hope you'll join us for that. Have a great weekend, JT, and I'll see you
at
9 a.m. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.